Hi, I'm Paul Camillos, and welcome to Shooting the Breeze. Join me and the STB crew for Series 8. Just hit that subscribe button, and if you enjoy the pod, share it and give it a like.
Having the background knowledge, the education, the science behind physical activity and the benefits of sport in the female body, and again, for everybody, in order to stay in the game or to stay active. Like as Madel said, we've developed this program to continuously share and break the myths. That's one of the barriers, I guess, for females staying being physically active.
Welcome to Shooting the Breeze. I'm Paul Camillos, and joining me today, we have Madel Guevara, who's been on the show previously when we spoke about first subs, and Issei Oreado, the head of skills at Hoop Sports Performance. We're going to be talking about a program that's launching soon called Let Us Stay in the Game. Welcome back, Madel, and Issei, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, look, first of all, Madel, it's great to see you again. It's been a while. What's been happening?
Yeah, it's been a while. Because of injury, because I fractured my foot. Took me out for a little bit. But also just life in general, I've reached a stage of my life as a woman where I'm experiencing different changes in my body. So physical activity, my participation in sport, I'm being challenged right now with that. From, you know, going through the later side of my years. And it's actually how I ended up connecting with Hoops and Issei. So that's why we're here today.
Okay, cool. And Issei, yes, you're the head of skills at Hoop Sports Performance, but there's also, you know, NBA Global Academy, sports scientist, data-driven basketball skills programming. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff there. So can you kind of give us a bit of a rundown about Hoop Sports Performance, but also all this other really interesting stuff that you had going on?
Yeah, thank you. Yes. So it's a really funny story because the past 2 years, I was actually living in Canberra doing my PhD with the NBA Global Academy at the Australian Institute of Sport. So the NBA Academy is like a developmental program by the NBA. So they actually have these academies all over the world scouting the best athletes in the 15 to 19 year old age group.
Yep.
And their ultimate goal is to have representations from different countries in the NBA. So I think at this point, they've already achieved that goal. We have, you know, athletes from Europe, from Japan, who's doing really well in the NBA, and especially from Australia.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, in July last year, they had to shut the academy in Canberra. So now that I'm back in Sydney, it's very timely. Julian, the owner of Hoops, reached out to me and we've been following each other on Instagram. So it's all through social media at this point, right? When you're trying to recruit, you know, people to work with you, to collaborate with. Yep. So when I came back to Sydney in August, he reached out to me within that week and we had conversations about my experience with the NBA and his goal of building a new facility and incorporating skills training. So a bit of background, Hoops is not an expert, but they've built a niche market developing young athletes in the strength and conditioning space.
Okay.
But then they also have this very big group of basketball specific athletes, especially in the west of Sydney. So because majority of the athletes going through their strength and conditioning program are basketball players, and as Filipinos, we are big on basketball.
Oh, yeah.
He thought about incorporating skills training on top of the strength and conditioning, because that will then build a more holistic athlete, right? So that's how I got on board with Hoops, building their skills program now that we have a facility here in Minchinbury where it's a one-stop shop for all basketball athletes. We have the gym space to do their strength and conditioning sessions. We have the half-court basketball court to do their skills training, and then we have a recovery area as well.
Okay, so how long has that facility been established for?
So this facility in Minchinbury was opened late last year, around November. We've only been operating for 4 months. Yep. So yeah, it's new. So we want to get the word out there that we are here. We're out west. We have a space for all those aspiring basketball athletes.
I think I think Isai is being too modest as well. I met Isai, I think, just before the second lockdown or the first lockdown of COVID.
Yeah.
And first of all, amazing athlete in her own right. And I was scrimmaging. Oh. I'm like, who am I scrimmaging? Why am I here on this court with this woman? And I gravitated to her immediately because of her generosity to the community. I saw her during COVID train on Zoom, family members, her parents, keeping them strong, young athletes, and that real passion for the community and her own space in sports science. When I saw that she joined Hoops, I've been keeping Hoops in my rearview mirror for a while. I started at Rose and I thought this is really smart. I actually tore my ACL when I was 16 years old and I didn't have the facilities, the expert around me. I didn't have the knowledge.
Yeah.
And what Julian was doing was also, in terms of focusing on developmental athletes, but also making sure there's prevention of injury as well. And that was really important. So when I saw that Isai joined the team and having known Isai, and I'm like, whoa, hang on here. This is a great collaboration. What are they doing? And so I'm just third wheel in here, Paul. I'm just going in Hoops and Isai, but I just want to say Isai is just definitely, like, to have a female coach around and the right area is so powerful. Absolutely what Isai was saying, just having this facility, this team in Western Sydney is already very impactful. And so I think there's something very special here.
And I actually want to just touch on the whole concept of having a facility like that in Western Sydney. It's a big area, right? And obviously there would be a lot of demand. How many other facilities like this are there in the greater Western Sydney area?
Like a facility where you have access to strength and conditioning and a basketball court at the same time. I don't think there's much, to be honest. How about you, Madel? Do you think?
Yeah, I think what I'm seeing popping up, there might be one. The primary business is a gym, and then there's some extra space, and it's kind of a bit of a half court, but nothing sort of dedicated to the connection of the kind of the physical development plus the game. So, and I know Julian's had the Rhodes Clinic for quite a long time. And yeah, so I think instantly when they open in Minchinbury, there's been a lot of interest.
Yeah, and because obviously you look at the greater Western Sydney area and you look at the growth of basketball generally across the community, and the lack of court facilities generally, an opportunity for an organization like Hoops and for having a facility like that, I'm kind of guessing you guys must get absolutely smashed with people wanting to participate.
Yes, that was actually the goal. But I think where we're struggling is getting the word out. So at the moment, so we're using social media as our main marketing tool to get the word out. But I feel like we're not reaching enough people with social media banning access to 16-year-old and below. Yeah. So as soon as that law was passed, we had to shift our marketing strategy to target the parents. Because before, when we were like, I do believe the way Hoops got athletes was through social media, kids sharing their experience with Hoops. So then the other kids will feel like they're left out. And then they would tell their parents, hey, mom, I want to go to Hoops. I want to, you know, train with my friends. I want to play with my friends. Yep. But now that is gone, we have to shift our focus to target the parents and to show them that, hey, we have a facility to help your child develop in a very holistic way, not just, you know, focusing on strength and conditioning, but also having fun with their friends. A community space where they can hang out in a safe manner, away from the environmental, harshness of maybe it's raining outside or it's too hot, they can come in, hang out with their friends, you know, for as long as they want during school holidays or whatnot. So
I think, Nepal, being literally being Blacktown City, right, we're the fourth largest LGA in New South, in Australia, actually. We're one of the largest LGAs in Australia. We are one of the most culturally rich, diverse LGAs as well. And in many culturally and linguistically diverse groups, referrals is really important. Really, like a referral from a family member or a friend is so much stronger, and there's more trust there. We know that in a lot of the diversity research studies, that in these culturally diverse groups, that's really important. And the other thing as well is when we need to have conscious and intentional reach out to women and girls. It's really important. Basketball, you know, being a male-dominated sport, from a coaching perspective, it's male-dominated as well. It needs to be intentional. We need to showcase the space and the culture that we're building for girls and women that we're looking at holistically. And, you know, we've put together a program that is inclusive.
So do you guys get a lot of support from associations, or are they kind of seeing it as you're getting into their space?
I think we try to work with them collaboratively. So these associations, they actually have, again, issues with court space and hiring, right? And they have limited time because most of their coaches, like this is my perspective and this is what I believe, are mostly volunteer coaches.
Yes.
They have full-time jobs and they're just doing this as a voluntary thing. They're coaching because they're passionate in the sport of basketball. So at some point, they're going to have to collaborate with practitioners and specialists in the field who does this full time. So parents are always looking for that opportunity for their kids to have that extra edge, especially when they have higher aspirations to play internationally, nationally, at a higher level. So I don't think this is something that we're taking away from associations, but we're adding value, because by developing better athletes, the level of game, the level of skill is going to lift the quality of the games and the challenge, especially for, you know, athletes who do really aspire to compete at a higher level.
Okay. So one of the interesting things out of this is the lack of court space. And this is something we've talked about a lot on the show. How do you take on a challenge like that?
Yeah, I know. It's hard because we want to make sure that we provide enough for the growing demand. But it, to be honest, it does take a lot of money to be able to build a facility like this. And it's also seasonal. Like there will be, it's fluctuating, the amount of traffic that we get through the facility, especially during school holidays, right? So people will be going away, using the space. So I guess the challenge is making sure that we have a system so that we can provide enough opportunities for kids to access the space, and at the same time open up the space to more people in terms of reaching them. So yes, I guess that's the biggest challenge, because we need to have more funding through government initiatives and not just private companies building the space to provide for the community.
And like recently we've spoken to a few people and we've seen solutions for like for addressing court space issues, like, you know, portable half courts and solutions like that. Within your facility, do you believe that having a capability to have something like that happen, utilize like portables, allows you to, would allow you to be able to kind of engage more with the community, but kind of, I know you don't want to do it, but, you know, move away from the facility a little bit just to be able to give people an opportunity to try as a way to introduce them to the program.
Yes, we've actually received emails. I think that, I don't know if you've heard about the ECQ outlet shops.
No, but
so yeah, in Ruti Hill. So they're actually planning to build an outdoor half court.
Okay.
And they've reached out to us to collaborate and come up with school after school programs, school holiday programs to teach or introduce the game of basketball to the community.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. So, I mean, you mentioned it early on about the level of engagement the Filipino community has with the game of basketball.
Yep.
How big a pool of people does that give you in that greater Western Sydney area to be able to engage with, you know, from within the Filipino community?
To be honest, I would say most of our coaches to begin yep. with are Filipinos.
Okay.
So first and foremost, the people who love coaching and being in this environment are Filipinos yep. themselves.
Yep.
So that allows the relationship to build and encourage other Filipinos to be part of the community. But of course, we want basketball to be inclusive for sure. all.
Sure.
Right. But in saying that, like, who will be willing to build a career in coaching basketball? It's mostly the Filipino community, just because of the love for the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But see, the way I mean, the way I'm looking at it is, if you have a high level of engagement with the Filipino community and you look at, you know, kids at school, that's a great way to be able to get the story out to other people. Yeah, because it's like you've got this big pool of people who have been trying the program, who are aware of the program, whether it be through friends, family, et cetera, who then can talk about it to other people from outside their own community,
yeah.
which will then help to bring more people in. So it kind of, to me, it seems like it's another way to try and engage, particularly as you said, you've had some limitations placed on you with, you know, coming back from the social media bans.
Yes, yes. And I think that's what's happened, really. It's the referrals. It's the friends, you know, talking about their experience with hoops, sharing with other friends, and then also parents talking.
Okay, so now the two of you have got this staying in the game concept. Let Her Stay in the Game is the name of the initiative, and you're looking to launch it very soon. So I'm kind of curious to hear about the program, understand what you're thinking and what your short-term goals for this are. And obviously, if you've got longer-term goals, great to hear about that too. So give us a rundown of what the program's all about.
Issei and I, we're one of those people that we just love to read a lot of research. And we're so curious in our own different ways. And both of us have come across this particular insight, and we see it as well. We see it. Girls are dropping out of sport, right? They're dropping out. Yep. Girls and women are dropping out of sport. I've come from a corporate background, and I work in diversity, equity, inclusion, and human resources. And in many industries, we have this problem, which is called like the pipeline problem. And in particular with sport, you know, there's research that has found that by age 14, girls drop out of sport twice the rate of boys. Mm-hmm. And there are many reasons for that, whether it is social expectations, not enough inclusive programming, going through puberty, changes in the body. You know, recovery, we recover different. We have challenges with that as well. And we perform differently during menstrual cycle. So there are these female-related challenges that we have to continue participating in sport. So bringing, kind of merging our different backgrounds, but our love of basketball and sport and also passion for girls and women to stay active, because not only is it important in terms of representation in sport, right, but it's also about equal opportunities. It's about ensuring we do have the right facilities and the right people around them. It's good for mental health. It's good for physical and emotional health as well. We was like, okay, there's something here that we need to do. And let's think about it more holistically. So, you know, the pieces of research that we've come across in our respective careers, that's where we got to Let Her Stay in the Game. And let is really important because it implies that there is barriers, right? Yep. And stay the word is important as well, because we know girls want to be competitive. We know they want to play sport. And there has been a huge movement increasing participation in girls and female in sport, but we want to focus on keeping them there. So that's kind of a bit of the background and the concept of it. And working with someone like Isai and her academic studies, we wanted to ensure that there was a really high level of education element to it. So we are bringing information sessions for parents and guardians and coaches. We're going to be launching the program on the 28th of February, opening registrations. It's an open to all session. We're going to be talking to them about hoops and what the program is for International Women's Day. I'm going to be sharing a little bit about diversity and inclusion explained.
Yep.
Because we need a village around females to stay in the game. And then we do have some goal setting sessions for the athletes that are coming to participate. And then Isai is very much leading on the practical side. So I might throw over to Isai on the practical elements of it.
So maybe where I'm coming from, I'm going to speak from more of my experience growing up. So I have three siblings. Two of them are girls and one of them is a boy. So growing up, like, we're a very female dominated, you know, family.
Yep.
But then both of our parents were athletes. So I got the lucky roll of the dice that my parents actually encouraged us to participate in sports.
Yep.
So growing up, like, you see these boys and girls playing together. There's no gender stereotype of what, you know, what type of play you can do. You know, it's not just girls, you know, focusing on dolls, but they can run around, chase each other. And as Mandela said, at some point at age 14, when the girls and the boys go through a lot of physical and hormonal changes in their body, parents try to step in and create that divide. So now that you're going through this, maybe you should stop playing too much, stop moving around because your body's changing. And then my parents never did that to us. But then I can see it from my friends.
Yeah.
Like, my friends stopped playing with me. I ended up having only male friends who would love or challenge me to do different stuff. So I was like, what's happening here? So is it them personally not wanting to play, or is it the messaging around, you know, females being discouraged to continue playing sport? So throughout my high school journey, I kept playing sports. I got involved in multiple sports, basketball, frisbee. During lunch breaks, I would still, you know, my friends would still, you know, play, but there's only a select few of us. So yeah. When it came to deciding on what career we wanted to take, I decided, like, I want to do sports science. I want to learn more about the effect of sport in the human body and how we can benefit from physical activity in the long run. So I think that's just a quick summary of, you know, how I got into this field. But then even as I grew up, the messaging was still the same. My grandma, who is traditional, would still discourage me from lifting heavy. It's like, but this is what I study. Like, if I didn't have that background of the benefits of strength training, especially for females, then I would have listened to her and believed the myths and then stopped. So I owe it to, I guess, having the background knowledge, the education, the science behind physical activity and the benefits of sport in the female body, and again, for everybody, in order to stay in the game, so, or to stay active. So that's why I, like, as Madel said, we've developed this program to continuously share and break the myths. That's one of the barriers, I guess, for females to stay being physically active and playing their sport throughout their life. And that's what we're trying to do here. So on the practical standpoint, I want to encourage the female community to open their mind, to not be afraid, because I think that also one thing, the fear of, you know, trying new things, of, you know, looking like they're failing and not succeeding, but at the same time, do it as a group. Because if you do it with somebody else, you get that encouragement and seeing somebody failing and knowing that it's okay, it's a safe space to try. And hopefully that will encourage them to keep on going.
And you mentioned something really interesting there. that there's a push and pull relationship between the myths and the facts. But unfortunately, a lot of those myths are tied up in cultural background and cultural history. How do you see a way forward and through those particular issues, which probably would have a lot more influence than, you know, just the facts of the science that underpins what you're saying?
It's really interesting, some of the work that I do in diversity and inclusion. And there are some companies and employers that I've worked with and had the chance to partner with, and the level of awareness around gender equality is there. But it's actually, we are so far behind. There's a huge awareness issue. There needs to be more education about unconscious bias. I do not think that, I think positively, I don't think there are people there out there intentionally preferring male over women. There are systematic and institutional and historical reasons why we've got an unconscious bias to male and boys, and why when we look at sport, we see more men than women. I think, though, that we're in the middle of a fascinating movement at the moment with women in sports. We are seeing much more representation in all different sports. I think it was the Paris Olympics in 2024. It was 50-50 representation in gender representation, but not parity, right? So when we talk about more kind of the financial part as well. Yep. So I think there's still definitely a lack of awareness out there. We're going deeper around that kind of subconscious decisions, why girls and women and maybe even the people around them support them pulling back of sport. There are a lot of different health-related, you know, changes that may require them to pull out. So, you know, I mentioned earlier I'm in the later part of my life, and I've been diagnosed with perimenopause. Last year I was playing basketball and I was really struggling and I didn't know why. I wasn't recovering very well. I wasn't sleeping well. I was putting weight on, but I hadn't, my Tivoli levels, I couldn't keep up. And I was really worried. I was really worried that the activity I was doing, I could no longer keep up. And it was actually the people around me that made me aware to go get some support and help, go find out what it is. People around me who were really open about menopause and perimenopause, finding the right, it was actually my basketball coach, a male basketball coach, who connected me with a physio. They had people in their team, a physio team that had a women's health specialist. Yep. So it's actually, we need to talk more about gender parity. And I think also we need to give permission for everyone around us to ask questions and be curious. I think people have a fear to ask the right question, like to ask questions if it's right. It can get awkward. It can get messy, but it's about the learning, you know?
Yep.
Like a lot of people that I work with, oh, can I say that, Madel? I'm like, well, hang on a second. Like, so what's the fear in that? Let me help you be comfortable in language. Let me help you be comfortable in finding ways you can support, rather than trying to think about, oh my gosh, I'm going to muck this up. So it's about that raising awareness.
Yeah, and I think probably one of the things that you're battling in that particular area is the fact that, and I know this is going to be like, it is a controversial take, but a lot of mainstream media plays up the whole, you can't say this, you can't say that, because someone's going to get upset. And therefore what happens is people unconsciously kind of pull back from saying what they want to say because they're worried that, oh, if I say this, will I offend someone? Mm-hmm. And that's actually a big battle that you're going to have to face at some point, which is there's all that noise in the background about you got to be careful, got to be careful, you got to be politically correct, or whatever term people want to put about it, which actually gets in the way of having those honest conversations that you're talking about.
Yeah. I think stay curious. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of CEOs in multinationals, international companies, predominantly male. And some of them have been my biggest allies and supporters and sponsors in my career. And I think there's an element of there's one CEO that I can think of, and being humble, you know, he pulled me aside and he said to me, I really need to educate myself. What can I do? You know, and this is a CEO of multi-million-dollar business, being curious and saying, I don't know anything about this. What can I learn? And because he was one of those people, he was afraid to say something and muck up, and, you know, and then it just, it makes him pull back.
Yeah.
But he continues to be one of my biggest allies. And he tells me all the time, he's a proud feminist, and the journey that we have been on together, you know. He, like, when I met him, he was a, you know, 50-year-old white man. And, yeah. And just having that kind of curiosity, willingness to learn, willingness to make a mistake and learn from it. But I think also with coaches, you know, male coaches who are coaching girls, like, hey, why don't you have conversations with their parents? Why don't you have conversations with your female friends? Let's open up that conversation.
Yeah. And you see all of that that's going on, right? And what you've just described is a great example of how things should progress forward. And it does happen, but I think it's a bit slower than anybody would like it to be. But then you've also got this opportunity with this program to be able to show practical outcomes that will help that side of things in terms of, you know, making people comfortable about having the conversations that maybe they're uncomfortable with having. So, you know, how are you trying to get the program to be able to drive towards those sorts of outcomes?
Yeah. So, one of the parts of the program we have is a women's health panelist. It's open to all, right? Not just females or girls, but it's open to all. And we really want to encourage parents, dads, you know, brothers to come, because we really want to have an open conversation about what is happening to our bodies every month. How does that actually impact our performance, the hormones, and how does that impact recovery? And we are bringing some really intelligent women onto the panel. Isai is going to facilitate it. And we need to start normalizing those conversations. And if I think about my journey with my coach last season, Chris, it was a bit awkward when I had to go up to him and say, I actually cannot train today. This is what's going with my body, going on with my body. But girls and females, and also the community around them, need to see others talk about this.
Yep.
They need to see that, you know, we're not just, you know, hiding this. But it's actually sometimes a little bit of being uncomfortable is a good thing. It means we're diving into the learning zone. We're getting out of that comfort zone and learning. So we really want to try to normalize these types of conversations around our challenges, and also use more inclusive language. And how can we do that at Hoops and in this program? Isai, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I just want to add to that point where you had to come up to your coach and then talk about, you know, something that you're experiencing that is unique to being a female. I want to add to the other end of the spectrum, right? So I work with young females. So before I run a skills class, I check in with all my athletes, right? So how are you? How's school? How's your energy level? Any injuries? Is there anything that you want to, you know, raise so that we can modify training? And this young female, quite hesitatingly, she said that she's on her period. Mm. If I was a male coach, switch the scenario. If I was a male coach, would she be comfortable raising that up, right? So she immediately, it came to her mind, raised up, it's like under her breath, like, I'm on my period. So I was like, okay, thank you for letting me know. Then you know, we'll see how you're feeling throughout the session. If you need to, you know, step aside, have longer breaks, then we'll do that. I'll understand you. But if that was a male coach and he had no idea what was happening to this athlete, he would immediately think this athlete is tired, you know, lazy, demotivated. But there's so many things that affects that, right? And that's something that we want to also incorporate in our program, because even at my age, like, I'm, you know, in that 30s age, when I work with a lot of athletes and they see that fluctuation in their motivation, they feel like they're not progressing. But then we have to make them realize that, hey, it's not you, it's nature. right? It's Mother Nature working because you have something special in your body that you can do that males can't do. Mm-hmm. That is bring life to this world, right?
Yeah.
So it's very unfortunate because they see that as a weakness. But it's actually a strength. And a lot of people, the stigma is, oh, I'm on my period, I can't work out today. But it's actually the opposite. As soon as females get their period, I don't know if you guys know this, we're actually stronger. We actually hit more PBs. But it's the symptoms that comes with having our period, which is the pain, the cramps, that prevents us from realizing our strengths. And it's something that female athletes has to go through. So we'll incorporate, you know, daily check-ins with how they're feeling and partner that with how they're actually performing.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what Madel was saying, the awareness in the body, right? Cravings, I'm sorry, but that's something we can't control, right? I mean, I tried, like, but every month it just comes.
Yeah.
It happens. And sometimes, you know, females take that as a weakness, like, I overeat. But that's just something that you have to go through, because there are, to be honest, there are days in the month when you don't feel like eating anything.
Yeah.
And people think, like, girls think, oh, I have an eating disorder. No, it's not. It's not an eating disorder. Sometimes it's just the normal, you know, ebbs and flows of your hormones that, you know, changes your hunger levels, your satiety levels. So that's something that we have to bring to the awareness of, you know, female population.
And, you know, one of the things that you touched on is the fact that a lot of these topics, nobody wants to talk about. And that makes it really, really complicated. And what it's doing is it's feeding back into that, you know, myth fact discussion that you mentioned earlier. So where it's basically leaving a lot of female athletes, in particular the younger ones who are coming up and reaching that sort of 14 to 16 age period where, you know, participation in sport literally drops off a cliff, that whole concept of the myth versus the science is actually probably, in my opinion anyway, forcing that along. And therefore, you've got this whole education piece that has to come into the equation to be able to say, yeah, look, you hear all these stories and there is a grain of truth to them, but here's the science. And that's it's a hard journey because, you know, you're giving that message for a very short period of time, yet the exposure to the myth is, you know, for all the other hours of the day that they're not, that people aren't hearing the science. So how do you find a way to try and counter that?
I actually want to highlight, Badella and I were, like, we talk every day, right? We see something on social media.
Oh, yeah, we send stuff all the time.
Like, yeah, that's a good point. Like, but, like, we question also what they're also, like, what they're saying.
Yeah.
So coming from, I guess, a research background, it's very evident that a lot of the papers done, the population is 35-year-old white male, right? Yeah. And if I think about it, why is it easier to recruit males than females? Because number one, they're out there. They're physically active.
Yeah.
Right? They're easy to recruit because they don't experience the ebbs and flows of hormones. So I think that's one thing that researchers have tried to control. Because when you do research, you want to control as many factors as you can. And that's one thing that you cannot control. So researchers have been averse to studying the female body because it's too complicated.
Yeah.
But that's the number one reason why we have to study the female body, because it's too complicated. And being exposed to research and the academic, I think there's a bit of growth in that field. But again, the growth is too far, far from where we've gone looking at the male, typical male population.
Yep.
So we have to do more research with girls. We have to do more research with different stages in life of females. So it's not just one stage, because in every stage it's different. The hormones are different. So we have to make sure that we target all the population and look at the change longitudinally, right? But then that needs a lot of funding. So who's deciding on these fundings? Big corporations.
Yeah.
Is there enough support for the female population? We don't know, right? So it's a cycle. It always goes back to the funding. Do we have enough interest to fund studying this population.
Well, so, I mean, they should be because, you know, look, to be brutally honest, that's a large part of the population you're ignoring. I mean,
come
on, it's just
100%. Yeah.
You mentioned you've got the launch coming up and you're hosting it. I want to know a little bit more about the launch. Like, where is it happening? Can you share some of your panelists for the launch? I'm really curious to hear a bit more about that.
So we're launching the program on Saturday, 28th of February. So it's an open to all.
Yep.
So whether you are the female athlete, you're the parent, guardian, coach, you might be a little bit of an older player. You know, if I think about the First Subs community, you know, people that love being active and play basketball, it's an open to all session. The open to all session is to, first of all, showcase Isai, her experience, her passion, Hoops in terms of their facilities and their mission as well. And the community, you know, I'm going to do a bit of an education session of diversity and inclusion explained, right?
Yep.
Every time I do a session in DE&I, it does provoke emotion. And I want people, you know, if they get angry at them, yes, get angry for a really good reason. If it means you want to take action, yes, I love that. If it means that you're going to ask me, oh, where did you get that piece of research from? Where do I get more information? Want that. If it's about like, oh, I need to talk to my daughter, actually, how can I support her when she's on her period? I want that. So we're going to do a bit of diversity and inclusion explain, and then we're going to introduce the actual program for the athletes. So Isai, did you want to share some of that practical elements of the program?
Yep. So I think we also missed out on the main event, March 8th, which is the International Women's Day celebration that's happening all over the world.
Yep.
We're inviting a panelist of experts in women's health, specifically in the field of nutrition, physiotherapy, and then Medell will be one of our main speaker who will, you know, go through a model that she's created on how to create goals specific to women that's a bit more advanced
I'm going to introduce a goal setting framework to the participants that it's a little bit more creative. It's a bit more, hey, everyone learns about, you know, developing SMART goals. Hey, I think they're important, but I think we can spark a little bit more imagination, creativity, encourage the girls to be brave. And so we're going to be doing some goal setting with them before they start the practical side of the program.
Yep. Okay. And where is it being held?
So this will be held at Hoops Minchinbury.
Okay.
So all of the launch, the women's health panel will be held here. And then for the rest of the month, so 3 Thursdays and 3 Fridays of the month, we will be opening up the facility to women's only on-court sessions. So that's going to be like a scrimmage, a run that we will be organizing to make it systematic. And then we're going to do 3 progressive strength training sessions. So we're going to start with focusing on body weight training. So females or the athletes that we invite do not have access to the facility or to a facility or to a gym. That shouldn't stop them from being active. So our body weight should be enough to induce a good training stimulus to increase muscle mass, maintain bone mass density, increase our heart rate. And then because we have the facility to do this, we're going to introduce safe lifting patterns and techniques, reintroducing external weights such as dumbbells, barbells.
Yep.
And then the last day, we will focus on high intensity interval training because we also want to target professionals who do not have enough time to work out. So getting a 30 to 45 minute hit 3 times a week is something that we want to leave with them. And so that they're aware that, hey, I actually don't have to train every single day to reap the benefits of being physically active.
Yep.
So we're giving them tools, giving them this knowledge, this wisdom to look after their body in the long run. So, you know, again, the barrier is access to the gym. They're looking after their kids. But then if I can do this at home, the moment I wake up or even after looking after the kids before I go to bed, then that's something that we've already given them and they've gained. And then the culminating activity would be the 3x3 at the end of the month, where we want to invite, I guess, girls who have been playing basketball and then just to open up the space for a 3x3 competition, and hopefully we can establish longer-term programs for women's only in the strength and conditioning and the basketball space.
Okay. It sounds like a really interesting program that covers not only the panel, but also all the opportunities for people to get involved in the process as well, which is, it's really great. What's your long-term vision for this?
I mean, I'm actually really happy that that Madel reached out to me, because Madel is very, you know this, Paul, Madel is very experienced in building communities. And it's not just like a single event. It's a long-term event where there's that networking. You know, if I play at the local comp and I can't play it and I need someone to sub in for me, there's a pool of female players that she can tap on. Yep. And that's what I really like about being a female and just being in this space and being in this community, because we're very supportive. We have that natural inclination to help each other out without expecting anything in return, right?
We spoke about this. When you help one woman, you help a whole community, right? So when you think about long-term, I always go back to culture, Paul. Culture takes a really long time. And while we have a month full of events and at all different levels, and you can participate and, you know, you can learn or do the practical side, it is the very beginning about building the culture. And, you know, for me, supporting Isai, who's absolutely brilliant, and Hoops as well, build that culture for girls and women, because it needs to be intentional. So when we were brainstorming, there was a lot of high fives when we were nailing things. There was also a bit of laughter because we were going around in circles, and actually we already thought of that and put that in the bin, and it was quite funny. But, you know, I have built several communities around women's leadership in sport and basketball in other community areas as well. And it takes time. So part of it needs to be strategic, which I absolutely think this March program, it is strategic, it is smart, is intelligent, it is fun, right?
Intentional.
But then there's the organic element. And I'm so happy that, you know, I said to Mary in your team, Paul, I said to Mary last year, watch this space. Yep. And then I messaged her and said, hey, we've got something coming up, and connected straight away. And the connections is so powerful. And thank you for having us here, because we can't build the culture around this ourselves. So when we're looking at long-term, the culture needs to be right.
Yeah.
The culture needs to be right, because also long-term, we need to make sure we've got the right partners as well. And, you know, Hoops, like, it was unbelievable when I contacted Isai, like, oh my God, you're back in Sydney. I saw Hoops launching in Michenbury. Yep. Out of all the places, I was in regional Spain walking the Camino. Like, I was going, what do I do next in basketball? And I'm like, social media comes up, the Hoops logo comes up. I'm like, oh my God, need to do this. And the best decision Hoops has made is actually hiring Isai.
Yeah.
And the culture's going to start there. We're going to get through March. We're going to have our own, let's call it our own little March Madness at Hoops Michenbury. And then, there's something very special there, Paul. So we're definitely thinking long-term, because we need to think long-term to keep the girls in the game. So we're at this point now that we're very close to launching the program. We are now asking the community for support. So International Women's Day theme this year is Give to Gain. You know, paying it forward, giving, it might be your knowledge, your experience, your resource. It might be mentoring, advisory, whatever it may be, it's give to gain. This part of preparing for the launch is about, let's make sure that we're going to create the right culture, because that will give us longevity.
Fantastic. Look, it sounds like a really exciting program. There's a lot of opportunities and a lot of potential from everything that you guys have talked about, kind of touching on every base. You're looking at the science side of it. You're looking at the community building side of it. You've obviously got a base with Hoops that's got a commercial aspect to it as well. So really now it's the outreach and connecting to really start bringing people in. It sounds really exciting. I really am fascinated to hear how it all, you know, grows and continues, because it's filling a gap that's been there, obviously, and you've identified that issue, which is something we've talked about many times on the podcast, which is the fact that girls just drop out of sport at such a huge rate in that 14 to 16 year bracket. And the reality is everybody still sits there and scratches their head about that one as to why. And I don't think there is just one reason. I think it's so many different reasons that kind of pack on top of each other. So it'd be great to see how this all continues. Issei, it's been great having you on and meeting you. And Madel, as always, it's great having you on and having the opportunity to have a bit of a chat. Really, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you get our latest pod. And we really appreciate if we could get a like and a review so we can extend the reach to more listeners. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.